naked up in a bath of ice. I'm a victim of an organized. You know it is true. You know this time you're never gonna get it. But you already stole my heart. Yeah, you ripped it and tore it apart. You know it is true.
Welcome to Cutthroat Queens Podcast, where tiny clowns torture the souls of all that dare to jaywalk. We are here to take an open and honest look at all things indie horror. My name is Brett Mitchell Kett, and I'm joined by the neon faces gazing up at me from my keyboard, Chelsea Pumpkins and Elton Skelter.
Woo!
Hi! Did you know that I was once quote unquote pulled over for jaywalking?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god, criminal in our midst. What did you do?
The cop just yelled at me and I was like, okay, sorry.
And you didn't get a ticket?
No. Got a warning. It was in Virginia Beach. So don't jaywalk in Virginia Beach. They take it very seriously.
That one guy does.
He's like, people die. And I'm like, oh, I'm okay. I'm sorry. I didn't die.
Well, what you didn't know is that his mother died of jaywalking, Chelsea. You're really insensitive.
She wasn't hit by a car. A mean cop just walked up and killed her because she was jaywalking.
Oh, my God.
We are here for the...
For you!
Me right now, but like also the Lethe Press special.
No, this isn't the Lethe Press special. This is the Brett Mitchell Kent special with an exclusive interview with the publisher of Brett Mitchell Kent's new book, The Whispers of Apple Blossoms. This is the Apple Blossom special.
Can't believe it.
Do we have to whisper the whole interview? Should we whisper it?
Only at the Apple Blossoms. That's a very big point, part of the book, Chelsea, as well. You'd know that if you'd read it.
You're being cruel, and this is cruel and unusual punishment.
They whisper so gentle.
I hate whispering. Not just me whispering, like hearing people whisper is like akin to chewing food. Infuriates me.
So you're not really into ASMR videos, then?
There's nothing that I dislike more than ASMR videos. It bring me a rage that I cannot quench.
A rage. Well, I think well works. Yeah.
Damn, so flapjack and smart.
You are.
So accidentally Brett. Smart.
I got my Brett, smart phone.
Oh my gosh. Stop talking. I'm trying to congratulate your ass. Congratulations on your debut book, Whispers of Apple Blossoms.
Available now in paperback and eBack from Lethe Press.
EBack?
EBook. I said eBook. Did I say eBack?
You said eBack.
No, I did get my copies.
Oh, it's so gorgeous.
It's so beautiful. Honestly,
did you get
that is
our copies too?
Book. No. I mean, well, I brought two of my copies up here and I'll just replace my stock with the ones that you sent to me. And I was like trying to go through and figure out where I wanted to sign them. And I've been on like a freeze right now because I don't know where I want to sign them because I signed them here last time, but now he put the blurbs there. And so I'm like,
Let me see. Let's see some pages. I'll tell you where to put it.
Well, these are the blades.
Not there.
Is that the very first page or is there a blank paper for it?
Look
oh
at
my
that!
God, you have that.
That's this where you put it.
But this is where it says to Jason, I love you.
What's
okay, yeah,
page?
Don't sully that page.
What, there?
No. Flip it.
Then it's book.
Flip it. Oh, and then it's book. How about the inside cover? That's going to make indents in the cover.
Well, I thought about just bopping there.
Yeah, that could be cool. Make it a little doodle. Brett, do you want to give us a little summary about your book?
I shall. I'm not, great with an overall summary. The way that I've been like mentioning it, pitching it, whatever, is that it is at its core a story about an elderly widow who believes that she's communicating with her late husband through their houseplant. It's a little bit more complex than that. There's like a back story of romance. There are some heavy grief subplots, obviously, and it is a triple narrative with two alternating timelines with those three. So it follows Edna, who is a widow. It follows her daughter, Betty, as a child, and then it follows Noor, Edna's great niece.
You managed those timelines and voices so well. I was particularly wondering, because you do a really good job of examining, well, you mentioned Edna and Henry, and their love, like their romantic love over time, like from when they're children to when they're old and gone. Mm-hmm. And you like did such a good job letting that evolve in a way that felt natural, in a way that was super heartfelt. And I was wondering, like, did you map that out, or like, how did you like keep track and develop that relationship through their lifetimes?
Or you're specifically talking about Edna and Henry's past, right?
Yeah. Or like their whole life.
So the way that I write is almost always more than one narrative, and sometimes it's more than one timeline. So what I do is I actually break them out by timeline and then by narrative. So I wrote all of the past from Edna's point of view, like at once chronologically, and then do the same for Noor, for Betty, and then anything else past that needs to be filled in. And then I just take it apart and rearrange it in the order that I feel like it needs to be.
That's okay. Very clever.
So their romance actually was an accident. I'm not a romance writer. It just kind of evolved. I started writing it and they went there. In the beginning, it wasn't necessarily going to be Edna and Henry as the kids. That happened because I was writing this scene and it just fell into place correctly. And then that's why we did it.
So who were the kids going to be?
The kids were actually, it started out because I was writing a different story. Okay. And I was doing that, and then it just felt right because it was in an orchard. And that's kind of where it evolved, and the orchard portion came into the future as well. So I pulled the first couple chapters. I started as something else, felt very strongly that it needed to be with this, and writing those chapters is what actually finished out aligning the book in my mind so that I could move it over and change them over. And that's what.
It's cool that you had the like self-awareness and like vision and introspection to like put your story where it needed to go. Yeah, discipline as well. But that you were able to like you wrote something that was important to you and you're like, nope, it needs to go over here, and you fixed it. So it's cool. So you said you did not mean to be a romance writer, but I think one thing that's really cool about Whispers of Apple Blossoms is it really does like cross a bunch of genres. Well, it crosses like genres too. Like I had a friend that was just asking me like what I was reading, and I was like, I don't even know what I would like really classify this as. Like, I think it has such potential to reach all kinds of readers. It's
genre bending. It's definitely got loads of elements of, and you can tell that you're really, really well read from how it's written as well, like how many different genres you're drawing from, inspirations you're drawing from. But I'm quite interested in some of the like research you did. Obviously a heavy theme in this is about sort of floral life, and a book specifically that's gifted from Henry to Edna, and sort of little bits of trivia that would have come from that book. What kind of research did you put into the floral background, and why did that sort of appeal to you?
So that actually, the language of flowers in the book is my own iteration. So I pulled from a lot of different sources stating, like, there's a bunch of different languages flowers. They're like culturally spread out. I mean, there's a Victorian one, and then there's one that they used in, you know, the United States that was a little different. And the neat thing about the language of the flowers is that it was really legitimately used that way. You sent flowers that were meant to represent a specific thing that you wanted to convey to the person, and people really, really went with that. The book that I purchased that I think gave me the most insight, let me grab it one second.
Yeah, and while you're doing that, just like, because the readers or the listeners maybe haven't read, like every chapter has this like interlude where there's like the definition of a different flower and what it symbolizes.
And that sort of gives a little bit of an overview of what maybe you might be coming to expect thematically in the coming chapters, which is really a nice little touch.
Since I'm pretentious, a lot of the stuff that I write is allegorical, and I like to hide clues in basically the media that I reference within the book. So just to be clear, every single name that's in the book is a direct reference to the main antagonist in this throughout history. And all of the flower meanings also hold clues to what's actually going on, depending on if they're referenced in the other one. Like it's a lot of like detail that's not relevant to the story at all, but I added in because of the pretentious.
It's not pretentious. It's very, very thoughtful, because at the end of the book, you kind of look back on all of those little details you've been and been like, Jesus Christ, the layers and the depths of this book are incredible.
It's intentional and detail oriented and part of your craft, and it's not pretentious at all. It's very cool.
So I did, it was fun to me because I did, since I meant like it's allegorical, I had the overall concept that I was like paralleling, right? And there's only one review that I've read that actually mentions it, which is really neat to me that somebody noticed, but other people took completely different things from it. So I think that's been like my favorite part.
That's really cool. You probably felt really seen that someone picked up like exactly what you were putting down, but it's like neat to see how it resonates with others too.
And it's been getting some really, really great reviews ahead of release and since release as well. You must be really stoked at the sort of the attention it's getting, the love and praise that it's getting. It's all been very, very high reviews, people just seeing the work you put into it. And your social media campaigns have been really impressive as well. What made you want to become a little TikTok girly pop? What made you want to become the newest little diva of Tik?
So I started doing the TikToks specifically so that I could practice, so that I could start doing TikToks for this. And it was just like starting with book reviews.
This being our podcast?
Yes, this podcast, our podcast. And I did accidentally get myself locked out of the podcast to TikTok. So I haven't circled back to that, but we will. Maybe because it looks like TikTok's going away. But doing book reviews and that kind of stuff on there, I did decide, because I'm so bad at all the other forms of social media, to just focus my efforts on like communicating the book details there. And I put together some art boxes to send out to some of the reviewers.
They were gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
It went pretty well.
Yeah, everybody who received art boxes, I've seen all the videos on TikTok and Insta, everyone who received them, they just loved how put together they were, and like how much care you took. You wrapped them in beautiful paper with some nice twine, you put stickers and bookmarks, and in a gorgeous box that you could keep as like a collectible. It was very, very nicely done, and I think you should be commended for, especially on a first release. Most people just send out a book, but you went all out, and so good for you. Oh, that was really good.
Yeah. And like learning how to TikTok is not simple. There's
actually not for us old folks.
Tell us some of the lessons you learned about that.
TikTok is actually so hard. So I kept getting like warnings because I use the word gay. And
woo, watch
not
out.
Being mean, like this is, I know nobody's, this is a secret, but I'm literally a gay. It comes up. I bring it up every time I can. So I kept getting boots for that. And then also, like, I was trying to figure out, because I was doing this thing where I was stitching videos and then talking about books that inspired, like, that reminded me of those videos. And, like, it took me forever to figure out how to put the sticker up there. And then for a while, there was music just playing over my entire TikTok really loudly for a while, and I had to keep deleting and redoing it. It's not easy. So the people that do this every single day, and they're like, people are like, go get a real job. They are spending a lot of time making videos, because just one like 5-minute video in the beginning, especially, was taking me like an hour and a half.
Yeah, I believe it. And like, you did a good job of like kind of, I think you foresaw needing to use TikTok as a marketing tool, and you like spent a lot of time first building your audience and like kind of developing your TikTok personality before you like quote unquote needed to use it for marketing. Was that intentional, or did you just like enjoy dicking around on TikTok for a bit?
I didn't want to be, I don't know how to put this. Like, I didn't want to be somebody that just dips in and uses a community of people and then dips out. So I did want to do a healthy balance, like not mention my book too much and put a lot of effort into supporting like other TikTokers reading their stuff, like to do it that way.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So that I'm talking about other people and then myself as well. So it's not.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
You're a very relationship.
You're very relatable as a you know, like a slim, attractive, funny, smart Christian woman. You are very, very TikTok. So I'm proud of you for that.
But TikTok's going away. I keep mentioning it, but it's
maybe yeah, something else will pop up and replace it. It'll be called like
Schmickschmack,
Crisscross, or something. You know, it's coming.
Anyway, so you talked a little right before we switched gears about being influenced by this language of flowers. What are some of your other influences for this book?
Who as well would be interesting to know.
So I did tell this little story on TikTok, coincidentally. The idea for this was birthed when I was in a plant store with my husband, and he's a huge plant person. We have plants all over our house because of him. They're not mine. And he like just made an offhanded comment like, "Aw, I wonder if it loves me back." Right. And then so I was, it just got my wheel spinning. Like, what if it did love you back? And then it was like, well, you know, what if it loved you too much? What if it didn't love you enough? Like, and then it went to like, how would you communicate? And that's when I started like thinking about the language of flowers, which is something that I'd seen before. And that is where like I just kind of connected it, that it would use the language of flowers, that it would go.
That's a really cool origin story. Were there any other influences you had, like maybe in style or, I don't know, content, things you tried to emulate, or were you kind of off on your own?
I think unintentionally, we're always going to emulate things that we admire. So especially like Frederick Bachman, like he wrote A Man Called Ove and My Grandmother Asked Me to Tell You She's Sorry, those kind of books. He writes in a very campy way. I really love the way that he characterizes his older and his younger characters. And I have always kind of imitated that. I like writing super younger and super older just because I like the unique voices that they can come with. And he does that. I don't know.
I wouldn't even call it campy. Like, I think it's just like sweet. I don't know if that's.
His are more campy than mine. Yeah, but like
yours are like way better.
Like, no, his is way better, but they're just, his is like, he writes comedies, like heartwarming comedies. And
it's not a competition.
So good. If it was a competition, I'd win. But he's really great.
Well, aside from like you kind of executing like older and younger voices, I'm officially giving you my stamp of approval on writing women. I thought it felt very realistic, relatable, parts like made me laugh and felt relevant. Did you find that at all difficult? Did you have to do any extra measures? Did you have any like sensitivity readers? How'd you pull it off?
So yes and no. So like the struggle that I have is that I was raised by women. My mom
that is
was
the struggle you have.
No, I mean like the like to emulate a straight male voice is the struggle. Because I was my mother was a single mother, and like I had a stepdad, but he wasn't really involved. And then like I have my older sister who's of like one of my best friends, and my younger sister who's one of my best friends. So I've only really been around like strong I feel like every woman is strong, but like in my mind, this very set group of women, and that's what's easier for me to pull from, because these are the people that inspire me. So it's hard not to bring them into the books. I do struggle a lot writing straight men. I don't know that I've ever been successful at writing POV of a straight man. I could do gay men, but women are what I can understand more, because it's just what I know.
Yeah, that's cool. Interesting.
And like the character Noor is fully a self insert. It's, I mean, my little sister's not asexual, but her character is so pulled from my younger sister Janessa that it, like, I had to go in and tweak things because it was a little bit too directly obviously Ness, and it, you know, and then I wanted to add some flaws to her, and Nessa's flawless, so I had to do that. But she is very much a self-insert.
Aw, and she hasn't read it yet, right?
No.
Well, we'll have to get her opinion on Noor, especially when she finally gets to it.
Oh, sorry. You're
she will love
the sensitivity readers. I do. I mean, most of my beta readers are women, and I do try to approach it as like a, like, you have to respect your characters. So treat them with respect. I try to not touch on subjects that I don't think are meant for me to touch on, like essay that, those places are not maybe for me. And then I just try to just not sexualize, not randomly describe body parts that aren't really relevant. Mm. Like if you're running, you don't have to be slapped in the face with your titties.
Sometimes we are, but
like, I wouldn't know.
You don't know what that's like. Nor do I.
That I'm not even certain I mentioned breasts like at all, unless maybe like
I don't think there were any breasts.
Oh, the bubs. Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh my god, that bubs.
Sorry.
That's the part I like loved. I was like, oh my god, that's so sweet and funny.
Bubs.
But no, it was relevant. Like there are parts of women's lives that are like that. So.
And I do feel as well like you got, like, despite it not being a necessarily queer story overall, the central story is really centered mainly in the past with Henry and Edna, and the present with the mystery being unlocked by Noor. Noor had no specific sexual identity, but was, as you said earlier, was written as an ace character. You've got lesbian representation in there, you've got people of color, lots of feminism, feministic like outlooks and stuff. I just think you've done a really, really good job of finding a book that's going to be so relatable to so many people on so many different levels, and you've done it so sensitively as well. So I think you really need to be commended for that. Not only that, but it's outstandingly written. You have an absolute beautiful way with words. You're very much a literary writer, which I, you know, I've read some of your short stories as well, and you are capable of writing outside of literary, but the fact that you chose this story and you did it in this literary voice was just absolutely breathtaking to read. I can't recommend this book enough to people. I love this book. It's my favorite book that I've read in a really long time. So.
Yeah, and we like touched briefly on the genres it crosses, but like it does have like grief, mystery, like family dynamics, love,
trauma.
Yeah. Like it. Like I said, like in a complimentary way, like would be a fantastic book club book for like literally
Oprah. We're sending it
Oprah!
To
Oprah.
And you get a book, and you get a book, and you get a book.
And Reese Witherspoon, let's send it to her. Let's get this adapted for Hulu, baby.
Yeah, or like a real place. No, I love Hulu.
Wow.
I know, that was shady. We don't get Hulu here. Everything.
Did you know that there are three Planet of the Apes movies? Like, you know how they did a Planet of the Apes reboot with James Franco?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I knew there was one. I didn't realize it was a trilogy. There's a bunch of them.
Not really my kind of thing. So.
Where'd that come from?
I saw it on Hulu.
Hulu.
Oh, okay.
I was so shocked.
I was
by
like,
it.
Great.
Okay, let's cut all of that out. But Why don't you tell us a little bit about your cover artist? Because I know this is something that you, it's kind of like a dream come true for you. You had a vision for the cover. I think you had sort of stylistically quite a similar vibe that you wanted to collect, but then you started working with a cover artist and this is what happened. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the process?
Okay. So, I mean, I didn't technically get to, like, I didn't work with the cover artist. The publisher, Lethe, worked with the cover artist, and they went through the process of having this cover artist. Her name is Piper Day, and she goes by, like, it's Le Gauthier, I think, on Instagram. And she is just, like, the cover is amazing. It is exactly perfect. I couldn't have envisioned it any better myself. And, like, I feel strongly that I need to try to get her to design every cover that I've read, anything I ever write. It's so, so perfect.
It is gorgeous. If anyone has yet to see it, it's a it's fully generated from start to finish. It's not using stock imagery. It's an illustrated piece using electronic illustration. It's wonderful. Piper is a 21-year-old, I believe, art student from NYU. She's incredibly, incredibly talented, just has her finger on the pulse. And we were incredibly lucky to get her to do Brett's book, because I could see as soon as he saw the cover, I remember we were talking and he saw it and he was just so happy and so, like, elated. And so what we've got here is a product which is exactly what you wanted, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really stoked with it.
It's an incredible story, and you've managed to get some incredible blurbs, great reviews ahead of time, and you're just absolutely slaying it.
You've shared with us that you got some beta reading feedback that the character of Henry was inconsistent, but you have said that that's intentional. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So I was told that Henry was both inconsistent and seemed a little too perfect. And as we already know, Henry's dead in this. So we don't have Henry as a character. We have the memory of Henry as a character. And typically when somebody passes, we put them on a pedestal. We don't remember all the bad. We mostly just remember the good. And so the way that Edna memory, like the past scenes, the 19 whatever 100 scenes through Edna are going to be relating the perfect husband that she remembers, despite obviously they would have issues, and then the scenes from their daughter's point of view as a kid will be looking at it as, like, the way that a daughter and father would interact. So the two different versions of Henry are there for a reason, because he's passed along and that's not him. That's,
yeah. I think you do that wonderfully as well with the time lapse. You do it with a lot of the characters as well. There's obviously, like, generational divide between Noor and her mother and her grandma. And there's, like, the sort of differencing of the relationship between Betty and her mother. You capture such unique viewpoints for all of these different characters, and you make all of their relationships very, very different and very unique. And that's something I found as well, like the way that young Betty relates to her father versus the way Betty relates to her mother are very, very complex and it's all tied up into the story and the mystery, and it's wonderful. And I don't want to spoil it because it's so good and I can't wait for everyone to read it. So yeah, kudos on your writing of complex familial characters and relationships.
Yes, massive kudos.
You guys are being too complimentary of me.
Right. I'll cut it.
Littered with insults as soon as we hang up. They're going to be too backed up.
We'll restore the balance. Don't worry. You shared on TikTok and social media that there were a couple complications with the launch and it affected the pre-orders. Do you want to talk to our listeners a little bit about how they can get your book and make sure that they get it?
Yeah, so my launch date was Wednesday, May 1st. And we did run into a little bit of an issue. There were some pre-orders that had been ordered ebook through Amazon. And due to a formatting mishap that was completely unexpected, the pre-order link got deleted by Amazon and they canceled and refunded all the pre-orders.
Fucking Amazon.
It can't be undone. So those are lost, but I've been trying to, you know, get it back in front of the same people so that they could maybe pre-order, or not even pre-order, you just get it now.
Again. Yeah. So if you purchased a pre-order and didn't get it through Amazon, like, please return and re-snag your copy. You're definitely not the first person I've heard that happen to. It's shitty that Amazon is functioning that way. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, but there's a lot of rules and a lot of timings and stuff that sometimes, particularly when it comes to sort of creative projects, don't always align. And so there are always complications, but I can guarantee anybody who did pre-order the book and has yet to reorder the book, if you go back and you get it, you are going to have a splendid time with this book. It's brilliant. I'm not just saying that because he's like my best friend, but I am saying that because
I know he's, I like, really talented. It's like really good.
He's like really, really good. Like, I hate you. Shut up. Bye. Okay, so Brett, tell us, obviously everybody knows where to find the Cutthroat Queens, but tell us where we can find this particular queen, the Queen of Heartbreak, Brett Mitchell Kent. Where can we find you online?
The Queen of Hoot Brett.
Circling back.
Hoot Brett.
That's happening. Whoever we need to contact to get me that role officially, we're doing it. Thank you, Chelsea. You make sure that happens.
And I will. I'll put
my
things in motion.
Social media now is just Queen of Heart. No, I'm kidding. I don't know how to change them, but I'm pretty much Brett Mitchell Kent on everything. That's Brett Mitchell Kent on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and then on TikTok. I think that my actual little like at username is Hoagie Housen, which is my old gamer tag, which is just Hoagie and then Housen, Hausen, but it's like listed under Brett Mitchell Kent as my like nickname, so I think you can still find me. I don't know.
And they'll probably all be linked back to all the good cool videos that are talking about Whispers of Apple Blossoms as well, so that's another way to find him. Brett, thank you for being here and for talking to us about this. We are going to be back after a short intermission, but we're going to be talking, Brett and myself, to our publisher, Steve Berman of Lethe Press, and what it means to be one of the longest running LGBT run indie publishers in the industry. We'll be back soon.
Waking up in a bath of ice, I'm a victim of an organized. You know it is true, you know this time you're never gonna get it. But you've already stole my heart. Yeah, you ripped it and tore it apart. You know it is true, you know this time you're never.
And we're back. This is Steve Berman. I am a Lambda Literary Award winning editor. I am also a publisher of Lethe Press, which was founded back in 2001, and I've taken over this podcast. And joining me today are Elton Skelter and Brett Mitchell Kent.
Steve, you founded and currently are what, the head honcho, the editor-in-chief of Lethe Press.
Correct.
And it's been going for 23 years.
23 years.
As a queer-owned and queer-focused press, that's an incredible feat. How did you start this? How did you manage to keep it going?
So I was working for a Jewish publisher at the time, and I was writing quite a bit. Print-on-demand technology was just becoming available, and I thought that I could use that to help my own writing and make some extra money. So I decided to self-publish a short story collection, and then I wanted to do other books that had fallen out of print. And that's why the press is called Lethe Press, because in Greek mythology, that's the river of forgetfulness. So I did a few books that were no longer available, including some gay spirituality titles. And even today, 23 years later, I still re-release books that have been out of print for a number of years.
And that's important to you because the history of queer literature has never really been properly recorded. So to keep it in print is, you know, it's an important part of our history.
So is the process of re-releasing something that's already gone out of print drastically different than releasing something new and untested?
That's a very good question. And in some ways, it applies to your own book, Brett. I've re-released books that were orphaned when their publishers closed unexpectedly. Sometimes the book was slated to be published, like yours, and for various reasons, never came out. And so I brought it into the world for the first time. Then there have been books that were published by larger presses. And over a period of time, most books, the sales diminish year after year. And it was no longer feasible for the larger press to continue publishing it. And Lethe has smaller sales targets for its titles. The old adage is a book that sells 100,000 copies for a large press is a bestseller. For Lethe, a book that sells 1,000 copies over its life is a bestseller.
That's one of the things that I love about small presses and why this podcast and us specifically are so focused on the smaller presses and working with indie is because there's typically a clear mission or directive behind smaller presses, and they can take risks because they have less lofty goals than the big guys. So like folks like us probably are going to be picked up by a big five unless we do something drastic. But indie presses do have room for writers that are just writing because they love to write.
That's very true. I would say that Lethe's lofty goal is to put out the best books possible by authors that I admire.
So what is it that when you receive a submission, what is it that particularly attracts you to a story? What is it that that you're looking for essentially overall?
So there's various schools of thought with why a publisher, an editor, buys a book. There's the editor's own reader pleasures. I have various genres and subgenres, themes, topics that I adore. And so when a book comes in, when a manuscript comes in, if it meets X amount of these boxes, then I'm very much interested. Sometimes the writing needs some work. And so I work with the author on those. The other school of thought is the book may not appeal to me as editor in the same way. The other school of thought is that while it may not hit my personal reader pleasures, I know that it's going to hit a lot of readers.
There's a market for it.
Right. For example, I don't read science fiction. It's not my thing. that I have, though, published several books on science fiction that I feel readers will want to take a deep dive into.
Do you, in those instances where it's something that you're not as familiar with, do you still tend to edit those yourself, or do you use like secondary readers or anything for the other genres?
Well, I sometimes do ask other people whose opinions I value what their thoughts are. But when I'm editing a book, I'm going on at the writing level. I think that there's some universal things. I think that is the character fully developed and three-dimensional? Is the plot compelling? Are there are there plot holes? Are there questionable passages? I think that the book could be set in a Weird West environment. It could be a gay espionage novel. It could be a transgender science fiction space opera. Those do not matter when it comes to the writing itself. The writing is universal. There are tropes that the writing can use. There are themes, but you need to tell the story well.
Yeah.
Beautifully said. It is. No matter which genre or if you're literary, we're all working from the same bones.
Yeah, absolutely. We've all read books that we were like, I didn't expect to love this. Mm-hmm. It's not my usual genre, but this is something that I enjoy because it was so well written and so compelling and so inviting.
So we mentioned already that you are an award-winning editor. You've won the Lambda Literary. And am I correct that you've had a few, more than a few, that have made the finals and maybe even won additionally that have come through Lethe?
Lethe Press titles have won several Lambda Literary Awards and the Shirley Jackson Award. We've been finalist for the Hugo Lambda Literary, Golden Crown Literary Award, the Shirley Jackson. There's probably a couple that I'm missing, but over 23 years, we've released some darn good books.
And those are the kind of like award that you kind of want to be recognized in, because they're indie focused, they are horror and speculative fiction focused, and that's sort of where you're coming from as a publisher.
So my personal tastes tend to be queer spec fic, and I feel like my vision has been rewarded by publishing certain authors in certain books. But we've also done our latest finalist for the Lambda Literary Award is a gay literary novel. Nothing spec fic, but I did help the author, Patrick Horrigan, with the book. And I'm really proud of the result of what we did together, the editor-author relationship. And hopefully, fingers crossed, that it will win in June.
Yes, fingers crossed. I picked that one up. I have it here somewhere, but I won't leave the computer. I always wander away. That was one that I'm really excited about. And then I saw somebody post recently a Lethe title that they just received. Joe is the name. It was the German, and I hadn't seen that on there when I last ordered, and so I really want to check that one out.
Yes, that won the Lambda Literary Award for Best Spec Fic. Lee Thomas, one of the best writers of gay horror that's around. And in fact, he's won several Lambda Literary Awards. And I... and he has won several Lambda Literary Awards.
Yeah, that's great. I'm excited for that one. I need to get on there and order that too. So but we've talked about a couple. What was it?
Let's talk about your book.
Oh, my.
Okay. We go to it, Brett. Come on.
Yes. All right. Well, then just shoot.
Well, the only reason that I actually published your book was because Elton brought it to me.
Because I love that book. And there was a as you say, publishing's a very like fluidic and it has difficult periods and stuff. The original publisher that was going to publish Brett's book was unable to publish it in the end. And I knew exactly where it would fit because I know Lethe's back catalogue. And I knew that Brett would fit perfectly with Lethe. And it's just been a marriage made in heaven. Brett's particular literary voice, Steve's editing style and the creative style of Lethe Press has been something that's just, it's just fallen into place so perfectly.
What I admire so much about Whispers of Apple Blossoms is the romantic elements in the story. Normally horror writers don't use romance effectively. What it ends up being for some writers is a means to add tension and create victims. They use romance to trick a reader's sympathies, whereas I think that, Brett, you did an excellent job using romance to make us fall for these characters, and you understood that what romance can do in horror, it's the flip side of that coin. Instead of fear, it gives you hope.
Yeah.
Well, that was I really appreciate that. It's hard for me to like hear people
and about my the work. Fact that you put $100 bill in the email, that really I really appreciate that.
It okay. is very important to bribe your way anywhere.
Absolutely.
You will not get anywhere unless you're throwing
the
wads of
money. The problem I had with the 100 was that it was Monopoly money, and so my bank would not cash it.
Well, because I'm a writer, so
we don't make money.
There's no real money.
Oh, good. Then I could pay you for the royalties using the same, and I'll attach it to the email.
Good deal. I appreciate it.
Just give him little red hotels. It'll be fine.
Excellent. Well,
I did want to say though, because I really, really, really enjoyed working with Lethe. I have told everybody this. I found the entire process to be seamless. Like, it was perfect. I felt like the visions aligned. Were there tiny hiccups? Yes, obviously, but everywhere there's going to be tiny hiccups. The cover was more than I could have ever dreamed. And I am in a point now where, like, I will beg anybody that ever publishes my work again to use Piper Day, because I feel like she has my vision and she's amazing.
So Piper and I are working on a secret project, but I'll say this. It is mystery date related and not a book, but sort of like a game.
Wow. So you're branching out into other formats now.
You know, what it was is I like quirky point of sale items, and mm-hmm. I also like quirky giveaways. And what I wanted was to have something that I could send to bookstores that carry Lethe Press titles and have at conventions, that whether some people may buy it, sometimes I'll give it away for free, but it would be something fun that shares my love of romance and monsters and
genre fiction. Yeah.
That sounds exciting, and I am going to press for more information when we're not on recording. Just expect that. But she is wonderful, and if you want to follow her, she's Legothier on Instagram. She does a lot of little doodles and then some more like big and substantial.
You're gonna have to spell that out because no one knows.
I'm gonna link it.
Okay.
You can link it.
I don't know how to spell it off the top of my head. But she's wonderful, and I cannot wait to see like where her career goes.
Yeah. An incredibly young, incredibly like passionate student author, student artist who has just impressed us to no end. Absolutely fantastic.
Do you have any goals or changes coming? I mean, you mentioned the whimsical monster mystery romance date game.
Yes.
Secret. Do you have anything else? Is there any like other evolutions coming to Lethe?
I would like to do some more strange little projects. We're going to be releasing a copy of Lovecraft's Commonplace Book with the entries featuring illustrations by Michael Bukowski. That's later this summer. There's some writers that I'm looking forward to working with for the first time in 2025. I have some personal writing goals that I would like to have happen. Some projects that I've been working on for at this point, maybe decades.
Mm-hmm. So what do we have to look forward to from Lethe going forward in 2024 and 2025?
In May, we released your book, right? Whispers of Apple Blossom. We also released by A.T. Serre a collection called Signals in the Static. And it has some science fiction stories and some dark, weird fiction. And this is Serre's debut collection. In June, I'm very excited about John Linwood Grant's collection, An Unkindness of Shadows. These are linked stories that are about his 1970s art collector, sometime occult detective, Justin Margrave. I really like historical fantasy and historical horror, so I've been after Grant for some time to let me publish these stories, and that will be happening in June. We also have Eric Schaller's first collection was put out of print. I did his second collection last year, and so I'm reprinting his first, called Meet Me in the Middle of the Air. Great collection of dark and weird fiction. I really like weird fiction. In July, one of my best friends is Will Ludwigson, a man who, if you like literary fiction that uses weird elements and the strange and the eerie, I really recommend his first two collections, Acres of Perhaps and In Search of and Other Stories. We're going to be doing his novella, A Scout is Brave, which is about, it's historical fiction, and it's about a kid who moves to Innsmouth, Massachusetts, of Lovecraftian fame, and decides to start a Boy Scout troop there. And only one kid, joins him in the troop.
And the cover for that is gorgeous. I've seen the cover already.
So it's beautiful. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah.
Thank you. And then we're going to be doing, that's when we're releasing Lovecraft's Commonplace book. That's weirdly illustrated. So that's that.
So then, a lot of big things.
Right. And then later in the year, we're doing sort of some fun books, like more serial killers that are gay and on the hunt. We have things, we have haunted chicken stories, we have more literary gay horror, all sorts of cool stuff.
And potentially another anthology coming our way?
So I'm finalizing the stories in Morphe, which is a sequel anthology to Sophie, which I did early on in Lethe's history. And so these are LGBT plus stories of fairies, as in F-A-E-R-I-E-S. So elves and banshees and changelings and things like that. And Brett has a story in that he hasn't finished.
Yeah, I'm working on it. All right, so if you are looking for Steve Bourbon or Lethe Press, you can find the press on Twitter/X as @LetheyPress. Steve Bourbon is also on Facebook as Steve Bourbon and on Instagram as Bourbon Lethe, all one word. Or you can just go to steveberman.com or lethepressbooks.com. This has been the Cutthroat Queens, and you are welcome.
Waking up in a bath of ice, I'm a victim of an organized. You know it is true, you know this time you're never gonna get it. But you've already stole my